Welcome to another episode of Mac and Joe Talk on a podcast. Hello, everyone. We are back here at the end of June, looking forward to July. The last 6 months of 2022 are almost upon us. I am Mac. Of course, I am back here with Joe, as always. Say hello, Joe.
Thanks for having me, Mac. Good to be here also. Just a quick announcements. We will not have a pod next week. 4th of July weekend, where both Mac and I have plans, so we will. But that just means, as always, we will have a packed show the following week.
Yeah.
But for those of you who are expecting a pod next week, sorry, we will not have one.
Go back and listen to an old episode that you like.
Yeah, we'll get into a July preview. Mac saw a few movies, some general updates, obviously talk about the Obi-Wan series. A segment, and then we're going to do something a little bit different for the theme parks this year. For this podcast,
yeah,
I'm kind of excited about it. So we will get to that in a little bit.
We'll explain why we're doing it when we get there. It'll be a nice little thing. But Joe, of course,
still about theme parks, but just not
it is.
Not what we've done necessarily before. But it'll be good.
We're going to count down Joe's segment.
Mm-hmm.
A couple little news and notes before we get started. I did just write this down before we started. Maverick Top Gun, in its fifth week of release, is back to being number one at the box office. So it has conquered Lightyear. It has conquered Elvis. It has conquered Jurassic World Dominion. It has officially passed Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness worldwide. It is now past $1 billion. We said this last time, but it is Tom Cruise's biggest film of all time. It is only the second film to reach past $1 billion post-pandemic or post-COVID. Spider-Man No Way Home was the first, of course. But none of the other big release films that came out last year or this year have reached it. Jurassic World may. But certainly, this is quite an accomplishment. 5 weeks in during a summer season where there's basically new movies every week. People are constantly, another $30 million domestically last week for Top Gun. People are still either experiencing it for the first time or they are going back and back and back. It's pretty remarkable in a day of really, I don't know, Joe, would you consider Top Gun a franchise or would it be?
I don't know that I would say that.
I know, that's a spur of the top question.
I will comment on that movie in just a minute. To respond to your question, no.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. They're making a sequel to a movie. I wouldn't consider it to be a franchise, but
yeah.
Just because I think you at least need to have a trilogy of films, but I
mean, yeah.
That could just be semantics or a minor detail. I wouldn't consider it to be something that's... If we're going to talk franchises like, you know, Star Wars, Jurassic Park, Harry Potter, things like that, I would not consider Top Gun to be in that same conversation.
Spent most of the billion-dollar films we're seeing are from franchises, certainly. Mm-hmm.
So I think that's significant.
It's a big thing. But did you want to talk about
Top
Gun?
Yeah, I wanted to make a few comments. First of all, I might give it a chance. Talking to a few people about it and have kind of softened me up a little bit. There was something else I was going to say regarding the movie.
Can I come back to you?
Yeah.
Think about it?
It'll.
No problem.
You said $1 billion worldwide.
Yeah.
Now, when we talked, I think it was last week. The week before, you were saying how this is really primarily just a movie that people are watching in the United States. So I'm curious.
It's domestic gross. I don't have it broken down.
Curious to know how the domestic gross, how much of that $1 billion is domestic?
I'd be curious. Look that up.
Because that's fascinating to me. If it's $1 billion and like a huge percentage of it is domestic, that is really significant.
It's over 50% for sure.
Okay.
Well, for Marvel films, it's usually about
the other way around.
40 to 45% domestic, and the rest is worldwide. They're making up the bulk of I want to say the bulk, but at least 50% of their money worldwide from other audiences.
Okay, so I guess I was misunderstanding what you had mentioned last time, because during its like opening weekend or something, it really wasn't a big hit worldwide. And
yeah.
Not, because it doesn't really strike any chords that perhaps other countries' audiences would be interested in this film.
Yeah.
However, I guess
it has had
a
slow rollout. Again,
I misunderstood.
Maverick, a lot of films nowadays, like your franchise films, will open simultaneously worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
But Maverick, apparently, its rollout schedule has gone more traditional, where it has been kind of, it opens domestically and then it opens up in different parts of the world kind of gradually. Has not opened in China. A lot of domestic films are not opening in China, which is a big market for Tom Cruise. But still, part of the strategy is releasing it in different countries at different times is to have simply Tom Cruise go and market the film worldwide, right? If you open it, if your film opens worldwide in every single location in 1 week, Tom Cruise can't go to 15 to 20 different countries to go to all these premieres and open it up. So if you open it up, if you roll it out over a month, Tom Cruise is able to do press in the US and then do press in Europe and then in Asia and stuff like that. So it allows for that marketing aspect of the film. But we can certainly follow up next week. I think that's a good follow-up, Joe. A couple of news and notes. HBO Max and Kit Harington himself is developing a Game of Thrones spinoff based off of Jon Snow. Kit Harington is supposed to be involved. I don't know if it's a writing credit per se, but it's certainly a producing credit, a creative producer credit. I'm going to assume this follows Jon Snow at the end of Game of Thrones. We already have one Game of Thrones show that is coming out later this year in House of the Dragon. Again, this is going to be an HBO Max show. They're looking for content for HBO Max, which is the most important thing for Warner Brothers Discovery. I'm not going to ask Joe if he's interested because I think we know the answer to that.
Do
knowing
you?
Joe. I could be wrong. Are you interested?
I'm more interested in this than I am in the House of the Dragon. But
okay, you want to tell us why?
I'd have to watch the trailer. Well, obviously, or whatever.
Yeah.
Hear more about it. I'm not saying I'm sold on it, but I'm intrigued.
Okay.
Well, obviously, he was one of my favorite characters in Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really enjoyed the performance he gave. I don't really know, what else they could do. So I'm certainly hesitant, and not super optimistic about what the creativity aspect of what they're going to be doing, because I don't know that there's any more that they could do. This seems like they're having like the new series, which is like all brand new actors and stuff and brand new story that nobody knows, and then they're going to kind of tap back into the original characters. Watching the Last Watch or whatever it was, I was intrigued by, yes, not just the story. The Last Watch, for those of you who don't know, is kind of like it kind of goes through like some behind the scenes of how like the final season or so of Game of Thrones, and it has like different interviews with different like extras and things. But I always thought it was interesting seeing there was a really small moment where one of the extra characters, the extras, the guys who kind of play like, whatever the henchmen in the background, the warriors or fighters.
Yeah.
He kind of, the very last scene that is filmed is Kit Harington talking about Jon Snow. And I really remembered, it really resonated with me and really, stood out to me that he was extremely humbled by the experience of playing, being on Game of Thrones. You could see he was a little emotional about it, and he kind of said something to the effect of, maybe not this exact word, but he said, this will be the best thing, the greatest thing that I ever do. So he understood the gravity and the importance of the character he was playing. He's gotten some work in other things, but I think, that kind of rings true. It was just kind of, as I know we've mentioned before, kind of lightning in the bottle. I can understand why they're going to try to reprise this role. I get it. So I'm not super optimistic, but I understand. I'm curious. But I've always kind of respected that, seeing that side of him, that he was still humble and he was still, he's not some big, yes, he was super popular and he's a movie star and all this stuff, but he's still, he understands the limitations of his quote unquote career as an actor or whatever. In that moment, anyway, I appreciated that he wasn't too big for the moment. He didn't let it get to go to his head. Like, he was still appreciative of everybody who helped him out, at least in that moment as it was portrayed. So I've kind of had respect for him in that sense. So it gives me some optimism, but I don't know what else they could do.
I mean, certainly the idea that he would have a bigger, right, he will always be credited as Jon Snow from Game of Thrones to a certain extent, right? This will be the biggest role he'll ever do. What happens to the character going forward? I mean, I don't know what you do, right? He's off with the wildlings. I mean, there's a, you know, I've read some talks about it and you know, well, what would they have to do to get Jon Snow back over the wall? And then, like, well, that kind of defeats the purpose of him going past the wall the first time, right? Well, what if his sister's in trouble? Then he has to go back over and it's like, well, now all of a sudden his Sansa are going to be in the show. And then all of a sudden becomes Game of Thrones Part 2, right? So there is a, I don't want to say a worry for me because it's not really a worry, but what would intrigue me is if he does new adventures or new stories or new characters. If he's with Tormund, that's fine because they're already there together. Or there's new adventures, new stories, new things. But if they just, you know, we'll talk about Obi-Wan a little bit, but kind of trick, do a loophole to get other characters back involved with him where he has to go back over, I'm not sure that intrigues me so much. I didn't hate the ending of Game of Thrones like other people. I thought it was fine. It wasn't great. I thought it was fine for the most part. So I was happy where the character ended. But we'll see as more information comes out. Again, it's they are developing it. It hasn't been officially greenlit. Nothing's been shot yet. So we're talking at least 1.5, 2 years down the road before we see anything. We'll see if it even happens as well. Netflix has confirmed that the streaming giant will include tiers with ads in the near future. So basically right now it's there are no ads in Netflix, but at some point Netflix is going to look to increase revenue as they feels like they've probably tapped out their subscriber base to a certain extent. And so they need to have new forms of revenue coming in. So, you know, Netflix is still popular. I assume people are going to buy it. But if you're going to stay on the lower price tier, you're going to get commercials coming soon. Or you could pony up another probably $4 or $5 per month and not get commercials. So most of the other services now, like Hulu, Peacock, you still get commercials in those shows. But others like, you know, Prime or HBO Max, you don't get commercials. I mean, that's part of your service next. But Netflix has not been commercials. But again, Netflix as a business model, this is their only revenue, so they need to add more ways of revenue to it, as it were. Anything you want to add on that, Joe, or do you want to move on?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, film reviews. I did get around to seeing Hustle on Netflix starring Adam Sandler. Again, for what it's worth, I'm not saying Rotten Tomatoes is the be-all, end-all. This is Adam Sandler's highest-rated film. It's at a 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's really, really good. It is not an Adam Sandler comedy by any certain stretch, but it's not like Uncut Gems either, where it's this kind of dark story that you're kind of following through this kind of flawed character. It really just is this interesting story of him as a talent scout, kind of worldwide searching for basketball talent. Most of the players, if not all the players, I certainly didn't recognize some, are NBA players, whether they're playing themselves or whether they're playing other people. So if you're an NBA fan, you will certainly get name recognition. The guy that is the basketball player is a player. He plays on the Timberwolves right now. He is Spanish. Some people have compared it to like He Got Game or something like that, where this he's kind of being recruited by different factors and what his future is going to be. I don't think it's not necessarily like that, but it is good. Adam Sandler, when he wants to be, when he's done other films, whether it's Uncut Gems, Punch Drunk Love, things like that, he has shown he has acting range. He has done other stuff. If you like Adam Sandler, I think you'll like the film. LeBron James is a producer. He doesn't appear in it, though. But there are other ones. Joel Embiid makes a funny appearance. It's really funny. James Harden is in the film for a little bit. So if you like those type of films, if you like sports films, I think you'll like it. I did see Baz Luhrmann's Elvis. It was what I thought it was going to be. It was loud. It was bright. It was colorful. It was lots of musical numbers spread throughout. I really liked it. I was intrigued. I walked into the film not knowing really anything about Elvis the person. Never really listened to his music. Never really did any reading up on the character. So I didn't know anything about it. You learned about his manager, who's played by Tom Hanks. After the film, I was intrigued, so I read up a little bit about him because he's kind of a shady character in the film, and he was apparently a really shady character in real life as well, which took advantage of Elvis and other people he worked with. Elvis is very much associated with Las Vegas to a certain extent, and he had like a 5-year residency in Las Vegas, but the kind of story behind that, at least the way it's portrayed in the film, is that he was kind of conned into being there and kind of taken advantage of by his manager and other people. And, you know, I didn't realize that Elvis died at 42 from like a drug overdose. And but his legacy is, and there's lots of controversial things about Elvis. Like when he met his wife, he was 23 at the time, I believe. And she was like 14, but he was like in Germany. Like it was there's lots of interesting or non-interesting tidbits, I guess, about Elvis that I found the film really intriguing. Austin Butler, who's done TV and film, mostly minor roles. This is by far the biggest thing he's ever done. Could it be a breakout, like an Ariana DeBose from West Side Story or something like that, where all of a sudden he's cast in lots of different things? I don't think it's as good as, I mean, it's just under a film like Rocket Man or something like that. But again, I didn't know the story of Elvis, so it was intriguing to me. Maybe if you knew the life of Elvis, maybe some of this stuff wouldn't be as like revelatory or shocking. But for me, like every time something new happened, I was like, oh, that's crazy. How much of it is added on to, not fabricated, but how much of it is embellished or things like that? Certainly from a film perspective, it could be. But I would highly, highly recommend Elvis. Maybe my second best film of the year so far behind Top Gun Maverick. I do want to see it again. Especially on a big screen with a big sound system as well. But Joe, I know you saw a film, so would you like to go ahead and go?
Yeah, I ended up, as I was home for a few weeks, I finally got around to watching this movie on HBO. Came out, I want to say, in December of last year. And again, I won't spend a whole lot of time talking about it because it is old. But I just wanted to plug it anyway, as it is a fairly new film. And that is Oscar Isaac and Tiffany Haddish's The Card Counter. This was, I guess, produced by Martin Scorsese. And I know you had seen it.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting. I think Oscar Isaac is an amazing talent. He is very, very good. Ty Sheridan was good in it. The story was a little strange. It's not as it was. It is entirely, I feel like the story is very, very different than was advertised in the trailer, which is fine. But it was almost like I wasn't sure where it was going to go. I didn't really understand what the point of the story was. You know, having a guy who kind of plays blackjack and counts cards, like that's what it was, you know, advertised as, you know, and then he meets some, you know, love interest in Tiffany Haddish. I don't even remember seeing Ty Sheridan in the trailer. Neither did I see Willem Dafoe. So it was kind of like, okay, it's this guy who is like a card hustler, or, you know, he's making money gambling and he meets some love interest. Like that's all I knew.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like that at all. You know, that was I think the minor part of the film. The bigger part of the film was like this guy dealing with kind of PTSD from like working, you know, being in the military. And that's kind of where Ty Sheridan is. He kind of meets him at a casino or something, and he's trying to, you know, get back at his former commander, who was Willem Dafoe. And so, you know, Oscar Isaac, I guess, is trying to like help him find his path. you know, but not, you know, to kind of steer him away from doing something that would be illegal or immoral or, you know, not, you know, to steer him away from the, you know, doing something,
creating a big mistake.
Yeah, making a big mistake.
Yeah.
So that, but, and that was the premise of the movie. Right. It, you know, the card counting and kind of the casino vibe was like kind of just the setting for that. So it was really, it was very much a slow burn. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that the ending paid off for me in terms of like, you know, how it ended. I thought it was kind of odd. You know, to me personally, I think that performance by Oscar Isaac was worth watching the movie, but I just don't know that it kind of, I didn't feel overly satisfied after watching the movie. Like, it was very good. It was interesting. You know, Willem Dafoe was great. Ty Sheridan was great. Tiffany Haddish was great. But Oscar Isaac, to me, is the star of the film, and he's awesome on screen. He commands all my attention when he's on screen, you know. So, you know, I have yet to see a movie that he's been in that I didn't enjoy. I will say he kind of plays a similar type role, though, in many films.
Apocalypse?
I didn't think it was bad.
Okay, you liked Apocalypse, okay.
I didn't think he was bad.
Oh, yeah.
I'm saying. But like other movies, even like in Dune or even like, you know, Most Violent Year, he kind of plays like a similar type guy. Like he doesn't, I'm not sure that he has huge, or I'm not sure I've seen very much range in him.
Okay.
You know, in terms of doing all different kinds of roles. But be that as it may, I mean, was he different than that in Moon Knight, or was he kind of similar, like just kind of like a stoic guy who's pensive and very like,
It's funny you say that.
Because I'm not saying it's bad. He's certainly very, very good. I just don't see, you know, like I compare him to like a Christian Bale. And Christian Bale does all sorts of stuff. You know, Tom Hanks does all sorts of stuff. And I'm not saying that that's the benchmark. I'm just saying like I feel like he kind of plays a very – he plays like the more like independent films like where he's a – like I say, a stoic guy who's serious. He doesn't really joke around much. You know, he's very much – introspective and all this stuff. Like he doesn't come off as arrogant or anything. Like I just feel like he has the same kind of character every time. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Was it like that in Moon Knight too?
Let's
say it's a bad thing.
No, of course not. There was an interview from Moon Knight, and it was how he filmed the card counter, and Moon Knight back to back. And in Moon Knight, he's playing three different personalities basically. And one of the personalities is very stoic, kind of straight-laced, kind of deep voice, deep eyes, and you kind of take him serious, like he's a little menacing. The other character was a little over the top, per se, and it was a little jarring to see that personality because you hadn't seen that. It wasn't bad, but you hadn't seen that much of it.
Got it.
But certainly one of the personalities is very much this, like, straight face, well, I'm going to kill you.
Yes.
And
that's kind of so what, and he's very, very good at that. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's kind of always the role he plays. Like even in Dune, yes, he didn't seem like he was menacing, but he felt like he was all business and no fooling. And that, you know, I feel like he does that exceptionally well. I worry that I don't see him in any of the roles. That's all.
That's a good point.
It was a good movie. I don't know that I would recommend it. I'm kind of so-so.
Okay.
Like I said, the ending really didn't pay off, and I felt like it was a very, very slow burn. But Oscar Isaac, to me, was worth watching. And I
but you're glad you gave it a chance?
I'm glad. I gave it a chance. It just it wasn't what I was expecting at all.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, thank you
One last thing I'll say, totally different movie. I didn't get to watch the whole thing because I ended up falling asleep because it was very late and I was tired. But I ended up watching a bit of The Northman.
Okay.
And you were right.
Yeah.
You were absolutely right. It is very, very similar in type, in kind of feel as The Green Knight.
Okay.
It's not the same, but it's very, very similar in terms of how the story goes, like different chapters and things, and how it's very heavy on the symbolism, very heavy on the, you know, the archetypes and all this kind of stuff, you know. But it was good. I liked what I had seen. I liked it better than Green Knight, but, you know, very, very similar. Because I remember you said it's very similar to the green.
That was a really good comparison.
It's very, very, it's a very strange, not strange, just not your typical movie that you see these days. Like I said, very heavy on the symbolism and the archetypal meaning behind things.
Yeah.
Willem Dafoe was good in it, obviously. I didn't see the whole thing, but you know, Ethan Hawke. I mean, it was just over the top performances. You know, really heavy on the emotion and things. Like I said, it was interesting. I kind of do want to see how it ends, but we'll see. I'm not sure. But anyway,
well, if you do follow up, let us know. What you thought, of course.
An interesting movie too, but just not super. I don't know much about that director, but I guess he kind of does similar type stuff always.
Like The Lighthouse and things like that, where...
well, that makes sense. Willem Dafoe, too.
Cool. Thank you very much. We did get the finale of... Is it season one? Is it a limited series? Who knows? Going forward of Obi-Wan Kenobi, limited series season one ended. Last week, Joe, we watched it on the night of...
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want to get spoiled.
We did.
The Wednesday night.
I just don't remember. I can't remember what day.
I think we watched it on Wednesday.
Okay.
I will say, Joe, you just talked a little bit, so I'll give you a little bit of a break.
Why don't you give people your opinions and stuff?
I was very mixed on the first half of the season, as we talked about in last week's pod. I very much I enjoyed the second half of the season. I understood once we got more character development for certain characters like Reva or other things like that, I certainly understood a little bit more of the backstory, and certainly understood a little bit more of the motivations. I didn't always think the plot thinking of some of the characters was always great, right? Some of the missteps they would make, you know, kind of felt obvious. But I thought it was okay. I thought Ewan McGregor gave me what I thought he was going to give me, right? He's someone who's very passionate about this character and this role, and I think he does a good job of it. I liked Little Leia. I liked that was kind of part of the story. Joe, I wanted to bring up, you had mentioned they had when Leia recognizes Luke in A New Hope, or not Luke, Obi-Wan in A New Hope, she doesn't say that she knows him. There was an interview from one of the writers of Obi-Wan, and in Obi-Wan the series, he says, when they say goodbye, you can't tell anyone that you know me or that we've ever met before because it makes it dangerous for you. So whether that's something that they thought out or whether that's just a loophole for the writers, I don't know, but I thought it was interesting. I don't know if I buy that per se, or I don't know if Leia goes through something as traumatic as this, and then they don't see each other for another 10 years or so. I will say the final battle between Vader and Obi-Wan was satisfying. I don't know what planet they were on. They were on a completely different planet than I think we've been on. It was very cool, though. We finally got a little bit of flashbacks with Hayden Christensen. Which again gives more backstory to that relationship, right? You understand, again, you understood this, I think, in the prequels too, how you know, Obi-Wan very much loves Anakin, right? As a brother, as a friend, as a teacher, and cares about him, and he, to a certain extent, feels responsible for Anakin turning to the dark side, and he kind of deep down lives with this regret and lives with this in his stomach, lives with this kind of thought process of every day of, you know, what could I have done differently to help him? What could I have done for this not to have happened? And I don't know if it answers any of those questions we're saying. Maybe the answer is he was always going to go to the dark side. Right? I don't know. But I thought it was an okay ending. I'm unsure where they go from here. I always felt that Qui-Gon was going to be in it. Just from the simple fact that in the first few episodes, he kept trying to force call him, right? He kept trying to talk to him. Again, that would be the only Jedi that you would reach out to, right? Maybe Mace. I mean, I don't know, but I don't know if that makes sense. Again, Yoda is still alive at this point, so there's no reason for him to talk to him. They have to be separate. Whether that sets up something else in the future. Now, again, they're doing interviews now because the show's over, and Ewan McGregor's like, yeah, I'd absolutely love to come back and tell more stories about this. Where they go from here, right? Do they just, again, create another diversion for him to to come out of hiding and do something. Right at the end of the series, he basically looks like he packs up his belongings and like he's going to go on a trip somewhere. But, you know, at some point he has to go back because that's where he ends up right before A New Hope. So is he just going to go on some journey with Force Ghost Qui-Gon Jinn for a little bit and then come back? Overall, it was a good show, I think. Not great. I'm not rushing to see more. I don't think it's near the level of storytelling, near the level of craftsmanship, production, of acting of The Mandalorian. I think The Mandalorian is on a whole different, for lack of a better pun, planet, as it were. But I understand why people are drawn to the show. I understand why more people watched Obi-Wan than The Mandalorian. It's Disney Plus's most watched show. Again, because part of the nostalgia factor of having Ewan McGregor back as Obi-Wan. I talked a lot. Joe, I know you have some thoughts on the series, so please feel free to share what you thought on the final three episodes. But overall, if it changed your mind, or was it just what it was?
There was a German filmmaker that I knew growing up. He made a bunch of movies in the early 2000s, and they were based off of video games. And this filmmaker's name is U Boll, and I don't know that you know who that is, and that's okay. So I will explain to you who he is. He was a German filmmaker that was making movie adaptations of popular video games in the early 2000s. And it would be an understatement to say that he took those video game movies and basically ruined them. He took the video games, the IP from the video game, and he made terrible movies. And the only reason that people were quasi-drawn to those films was because they were based off of popular video games. But they were poorly done on so many levels, and he became kind of infamous as this horrible director who makes movies based off of video games. But it would seem that he did it because he liked video games, fair enough. But the end product was never, ever great.
But he got multiple films, though, right?
He made multiple films. Yeah. And some of them have been, like, ranked as some of, like, the worst movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Because people were so disappointed and so upset at the portrayal of these video games on film.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it had a few talented stars in them, because they did. Like, you know, Ben Kingsley and stuff like that. But they were just so poorly done that they really they really left a sour taste in people's mouths.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of this series, I think of U Boll. Simply not per se because of the director, who I don't really know and doesn't matter. But I felt like I was watching a U Boll film. Even though this was a series, it would be hard for me to think of a time where I was very engaged and captivated and was totally immersed in the story, and forgot I was watching something other than a TV show. I'm trying to be as respectful as possible, but I did not. I thought this was a horrible series. There is very little about it that I thought was redeeming or interesting to me. I would say probably the highlight of it was John Williams' soundtrack, simply because I think he's a great composer and I think he didn't do a disservice. But I thought everything about this series, from how it was shot, the cinematography, the plot, the lines, the acting, it was horrible on so many levels. I did not believe anything I was watching. I was not engaged at all. There were countless plot holes, and then I'll mention them right now. First of all, the Grand Inquisitor apparently dies. I guess is it Third Sister? Because I don't remember, and I really don't care. Who is it, the person?
Riva,
Third Sister? Riva, okay.
Yeah.
Third Sister apparently stabs the Grand Inquisitor in episode 2 or whatever it was. Grand Inquisitor's dead. And then all of a sudden, he just magically shows up for no apparent reason. Third Sister also gets stabbed by Darth Vader, and then she magically just reappears just to suit the plot. It was incredibly dumb.
Okay.
Dumb. That's so dumb. You bring them back, they're stabbed, they're dead. I'm sorry. Maybe there's some force thing that happened. They stuck him in the water container and they healed the wounds. But that is not how it works. So that was silly to me.
Okay.
The whole Leia chase scene when she's getting chased by honestly grown adults through the woods and she's magically escaping. She's just a genius. This whatever 10-year-old kid is outsmarting adults.
Yeah.
Totally a joke. It was a complete joke. The whole lightsaber battles. Even with Obi-Wan and Anakin, it was like they were dancing. I did not believe for 1 minute they were fighting. Not one single minute. They were dancing. It was like watching a fencing thing. It was not like anything like the original lightsaber battles at all. I was not the least bit interested. And Obi-Wan's character was very, very similar to Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi. So what I mean by that is he's literally like so morose. He's so unhappy that he was, or he's so depressed and sad because his you know, the person he mentored turned out to be a bad person. We already saw that in Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi. And that was a big reason why people didn't like the film. So to me, it's the exact same story I just heard. I'm not saying that story is horrible, but they did a lot worse job in this series than they did in The Last Jedi. I was more captivated and intrigued by The Last Jedi and Luke Skywalker's character than I was about Obi-Wan. And since when does the Force go away? You just kind of lose the powers because you're feeling bad? I really don't think that's how it works. And then, again, in terms of the silliness of the series, Stormtroopers, the dumbest characters in the game. They literally just walked around dumb. And someone smacks them in the head and they fall down and die. It was so unbelievable. There was no – I never for 1 minute – felt like the good guys weren't going to win. Not once. It was totally...
Would that be a criticism of all Star Wars or just...
No, just the series.
Oh, really? Okay.
At least Luke Skywalker gets his hand chopped off in the Empire Strikes Back.
Got it.
There was nothing here. Again, and again, even the person who dies sacrifices themselves to save everybody, just like in Iron Man, just like Iron Man did in Endgame. So there were just so many silly plot holes, so many goofy moments. I could not wait for it to be over. And I think it would be difficult for me to find any TV show that I've seen, and this includes any sort of series, comedy series, sitcoms, whatever, that I enjoyed less than this. So go ahead and respond to whatever people getting stabbed with a lightsaber and somehow surviving. Explain how that works.
I don't know. I mean, how he responds. I don't know how he goes in the banta tick. I have no idea. But part of it is the thing is that Anakin knows who Reva is the whole time.
That's
she
not
knows,
what I'm talking about. I'm saying
right,
people,
but I'm
people
saying,
get stabbed and they come back to life. Explain how this works.
I don't know how he survives.
Okay,
right?
And then she gets stabbed too by Darth Vader, and she somehow survives. She's crawling on the ground. She's barely alive.
Yeah.
Oh, she's somehow alive. 10 minutes, you know, next episode.
Right.
It's a joke. A joke.
It's a joke.
Complete joke. I am so sorry.
I know
you probably liked it more than me. There are probably many people who liked it. They liked the nostalgia of it. But it was very horribly done. It was like, as I said before, like watching a CW series.
Okay.
Now, say what you want. Sure, those, they can be captivating stories. But even watching a little bit of Gotham on TV, just a little bit when you're watching it, seems more polished and well thought out than this.
I like
this
Gotham.
This was honestly just fan service. And it was so... It was bad on so many levels.
Yeah.
Like I said, if somebody gets stabbed, they die. I'm sorry. It wasn't like she got stabbed in, like, whatever, some non-vital organ. It's literally right in the middle of her chest.
Yeah.
The same thing with the Grand Inquisitor. And then magically he comes back. That doesn't make sense. I'm sorry. That's so dumb. That's so dumb. Not believable at all.
Okay.
So, like I said, the only thing that I thought was redeeming was John Williams' soundtrack. That was the only thing that was on par with everything else he's done. I thought that was great.
Okay.
Other than that... Terrible. Terrible.
Another Disney dead?
As Charles Barkley would say, terrible, terrible, terrible.
Another Disney dead for you?
For me. And I won't be watching anything Disney related for the foreseeable future. Nothing.
That's like one. Okay. All right.
Disney, Star Wars, you name it. Marvel, nothing.
Right.
So that's just me. It was basically a U-Bowl TV series.
Well, people do come to this for your hot takes. So sure. I'm sure they do. You did not disappoint, Joe. You need a break or you need to calm down?
No.
You're okay.
I'm good.
All right. Well, thank you, Joe, for sharing your honest opinion. Sorry, I'm thrown off now. July is where we're at. That's where
we're at. I knew that was coming. I don't understand why you're taken aback or surprised.
No.
You knew that was
coming. July preview. Sorry, I didn't know where I was on the page for a second. A few films, one TV show I wrote down. There's some more stuff coming out in July, but I didn't add a whole bunch of stuff. 7-1, which is coming out this Friday, if you're listening to it this week when we are publishing this podcast, Minions, The Rise of Gru. This is the sequel to the first Minions film. The first Minions film made over $1 billion, which coincidentally is the highest grossing film in this franchise. It's higher grossing than all the Despicable Me films. But this, if anyone remembers from that masterpiece, Minions, at the end of Minions, a very young Gru shows up, who's again voiced by Steve Carell. So this very much looks to be a prequel to Despicable Me. I like the Despicable Me movies. I think they're clever. I think they can appeal to kids and adults. There's lots of jokes in them. Steve Carell, this was the first Despicable Me, came out kind of in the height of The Office. So Steve Carell, still a big name actor, still an award-winning actor, but when The Office was happening, he was certainly mostly known as a comedic actor. He is coming back as Gru again. This is a younger Gru. The Minions film, the first one, I did see it. I did not care for it that much. Again, it was mostly just the Minions. So, but if it's Minions and Gru, kind of like a Despicable Me movie, that intrigues me a little bit more. 7-1 on Amazon Prime. Chris Pratt returns to Amazon in a limited series that's an 8-episode series called The Terminal List. Chris Pratt had a big hit on Amazon about roughly a year ago. It was The Tomorrow War, the movie, which I thought was okay. I think, again, I like Chris Pratt a lot as an actor. I think he's very good. I don't know about the story or the trailer that really hooked me onto anything, but again, having Chris Pratt in it certainly intrigues it for me. So, anything you want to add on either of those two, Joe?
Not really interested in Minions. But The Terminal List, I was a little disappointed to find out that it was a series. It is, I guess, directed by Antoine Fuqua, which I think kind of does hit or miss movies. But the ones that he hits, the ones that he does well, I always pretty enjoy. I just rewatched one of his movies recently, and I really, really enjoy it. I think it's a great moving film. Stars Chris Pratt, Taylor Kitsch. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, you're right.
Constance Wu, who is in Hustlers.
Yeah.
Like I said, Antoine Fuqua. I still want to watch that movie he did with Mark Wahlberg, but it's on like a streaming service that I don't have. You have it, I should say. I do want to see it because I kind of want to give it a chance. Like I said, I think he either, not that he does terrible movies, but there are a handful of movies. Most, I would say the movies that he's done, I probably have like 4 or 5 of them, and I really like them. But there are a couple that are kind of like, so.
Okay.
This really intrigued me. It looked great. I'm not sure if it's a limited series. I might give it a chance, but if it's going to be some, you know, long standing series that goes on multiple seasons, I probably won't touch it. So we'll see. Antoine Fuqua, like I said, hit or miss, but I always kind of give him the benefit of the doubt.
It's billed as a limited series.
Okay.
Again, in part,
it looks intense. I mean, and I just watched, like I said, I just watched True Detective season, not just, but like, you know, a few weeks ago. So I saw Taylor Kitsch in that too. And I think he's good.
Yeah.
And he's not great. I mean, he's probably going to play a similar type role, but he's good in that
role. Taylor Kitsch, great in the Friday Night Live series. Friday Night Lights, excuse me.
The TV series.
It's billed as a limited series. Again, I don't think they're going to make more because Chris Pratt has a lot of movies coming out. And so Antoine Fuqua is working on Equalizer 3 with Denzel Washington. That's filming now, I believe. So I don't think you'll get them to return per se. I think it's probably a one shot, unless it just hits fire and then Amazon pays them whatever they want. Mm-hmm. 7-8 Thor: Love and Thunder, the next film from the Marvel Cinematic Universe reviews. The film just had its premiere this past weekend. Reviews have been glowing. Again, Ragnarok was the last film from Thor, which was, again, directed by Taika Waititi. There was a review from the New York Times that said Christian Bale is the best villain since Thanos in the film. It very much feels like it's a Ragnarok type of story where it's going to be funny, a little uplifting, a little romance, right? Love and thunder with the reuniting of Jane and Thor together. Again, Natalie Portman returning, but will certainly be a little darker with Christian Bale in it playing Gore the God Butcher. Again, for those that did see Ragnarok, I know Joe didn't see it. Very much a fun film, but when you had Cate Blanchett, again, another award-winning actor kind of doing this hard villain, kind of deep villain. Again, I think that's what you're going to get out of Christian Bale as well. Probably a one performance, one off. And for some people that may intrigue, Christian Bale had some funny quotes in interviews, talked about how he would return to Batman, which was kind of funny. But I don't think that's ever going to happen. I'm going to assume this is a pass for you because you just said you don't want to watch Disney things anymore.
Nope.
Okay.
Christian Bale does not save this movie for me because I am 99.9% sure he's going to die at the end of the film and the heroes will win. And whatever happened to Thor's eye? Did it somehow get mad? Oh no, that was whatever happened to Thor's eye? Didn't he like get his eye shot out?
Yeah.
And then he has a plastic one now, or he got it from Rocket. That's what he got. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, he loses his eye in Ragnarok, so he has a patch. And he has a patch in the beginning of Infinity War. And then he gets the eye from Rocket.
But, yeah, Christian Bale doesn't – I'm sure he will be good in it, but I'm not buying it. So, no.
7-15, The Gray Man on Netflix. This is from Anthony and Joe Russo, starring Ryan Gosling and Chris Evans. This is the Russos' first film as directors since Endgame. They have produced other stuff as well. But interesting trailer, maybe, or not for you?
A lot of action. Definitely looks like any of the movies that they already made.
Okay.
Civil War and, all that stuff.
Winter Soldier. Yeah.
A lot of action. Chris Evans. Apparently people were excited because he's an evil guy or whatever. Ryan Gosling probably would be the only thing that sells me on this film, but that's not enough to...
It's on Netflix? It's at home?
It's not enough to convince me to see this, considering it's directed by the Russo brothers who did Marvel stuff, and I was not super pleased with Endgame. So, no. Pass. For me.
All right. 7-22. Jordan Peele's next film, Nope.
Looks terrifying. And I probably won't watch it, but he does make thought-provoking films. He almost kind of reminds me, and I don't know if this comparison's been made. He almost kind of reminds me in many ways of Alfred Hitchcock, like the types of movies he makes. Because I feel like he does like the horror genre, but they're also extremely thought-provoking and social commentary.
Yeah.
So I just kind of feel like it's the new version, or the new millennium version of Alfred Hitchcock.
It's a great comparison,
so
actually.
I just kind of feel like that. Like, yes, the subject matter is different. I get that. But just the striking the balance between social commentary and kind of horror genre is, I think, what Alfred Hitchcock did.
It's not just jump scares.
No,
like
it's
that.
Not.
There's
it
a,
means
a story
something.
Behind
yes,
it.
There's
yeah.
a story behind it. It's more about, it's not just a slasher film.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like he does that very well. I still haven't seen Get Out, but I know... You think, even that, like,
I think he would like
even
out,
that as minor of a creepy as as not scary as a movie as Get Out is, it looks scary, so I'm not sure I want to watch it. But even that is probably his most mildly scary movie of the ones he's done. And they're just getting more and more scary, in my opinion. I don't know that I will watch them.
You liked Split, right?
I did.
I would say it's on the same scary level. It's on the same scary level.
It's still scary. Okay, I might end up giving it a chance then. Because if it's like Split, I can deal with Split.
Just watch with the lights on.
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, I've done that before. I've watched scary movies with the lights on. In the broad
daylight.
Lights
on and then turn down the scary parts.
Yeah, in broad daylight, yeah.
All right. Well, I'm gonna say nope for nope.
I'm gonna say for this month, I'm gonna say Minions maybe. Terminalist, yes. Love and Thunder, definite yes. Gray Man because it's on Netflix. It's already there. I don't have to go to the movies. And nope, I'm intrigued, but I will probably wait till it hits a streaming service so I can watch it with the lights on, so I don't have to watch it in a scary dark theater by myself. Next up. Joe, your weekly segment. You had a tease last week that said you didn't remember what the movie was, so no one has any idea.
And I made sure I wrote down.
I think people like to guess.
What I'm saying is,
so
in preparation for your question on do you got a tease for us next week, I kind of wrote down something so I remember what movie is coming after this one, so I can kind of.
All
as
right.
You say, give it the old tease.
People like to think about
this. In any event, this is number 8. The last movie I mentioned was number 9. To me, is Crash. It's an amazingly thought-provoking film. I will always love it. I will always watch it and feel extremely moved by the story and get lost in the story and have it. Make an impact on me. Like, I always feel like I watch it for the first time, even though I know it's going to happen. It still has that impact on me.
Yeah.
So that's why it's got to be a top 10 for me. This movie is also great. Number 8, it is a biography, drama, and thriller. It's based off of a book. When I was doing some research for this film, I came across a review where somebody kind of reamed this film. Because this person said that the film was extremely exaggerated and, you know, not accurate to how the history played out. I get all that. I totally get all that. We've kind of talked about this ad nauseum before. It's hard to watch a film and not feel like you're being educated and entertained at the same time. It's hard to differentiate the two. And are those mutually exclusive? I don't think so.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try to assume that this is not an accurate depiction. But in any event, if I'm just talking about it as a movie, I think this is an incredible movie. As I said, based off of a book, based off of a real-life person, a real-life historical thing, like I said, biography, drama, and thriller. It came out fairly recently, less than a decade ago, so it's fairly recent. As soon as I mention some of the details, I think you'll know what movie this is, but I will mention the quote instead and see if I can get you to guess.
Okay.
And this is kind of the very beginning of the film, too. Are you paying attention? Good. If you're not listening carefully, you will miss things. Important things. I will not pause, I will not repeat myself, and you will not interrupt me. You know what it is?
Okay. I have no idea.
All right. Here is another quote from the film. Advice about keeping secrets. It's a lot easier if you don't know them in the first place. No? Still don't know. Okay, all right. That's fine. I would say it got a lot some accolades. The main actor in the film did get nominated for an Academy Award for his performance. I find this movie extremely captivating. The main actor in the film, I think this actor's best work that he's done to date. And that actor, this will give it away, is Benedict Cumberbatch. He plays an amazing role in this film. It's based off of, I guess, the life of a cryptographer and mathematician, Alan Turing. And again, I'm trying to say that this There obviously probably is things in this film that are not accurate. Fair enough. But the movie itself depicts a guy who is extremely awkward with social interactions, has some obsessive compulsive disorder, possibly. He doesn't really understand social cues. He struggles with nuance, and he struggles with fitting in and accepting, being accepted. To me, Benedict Cumberbatch's performance is extremely captivating. It's stunning. It's filled with highs and lows, some laughing moments, but also some very, very moving, touching, and sad moments, very emotional moments. It has also a great cast, including Keira Knightley, who, again, I think this is one of her best roles besides Atonement. Matthew Good, Mark Strong, who I always like, and then I wrote this guy's name down, Charles Dance. I had seen this movie, and I didn't know that Charles Dance... I had not seen Game of Thrones to this point. So this was back in 2014. I had not seen Game of Thrones, even though this person was... Even though Charles Dance was well-established on Game of Thrones, he may have been killed off at that point. I have no idea.
Dance has been acting for decades.
I know. I know. But in any event, he is incredible, too. He's not on the screen for a whole lot. He's on it for enough. But I find, and he did this in Game of Thrones too. He has these small little tics that he does that are just so incredible. Like, he has the eyes that will burn through you, like sear through you. Like, he's staring into your soul. And then, like, if you say something, like, you know, in this movie, Benedict Cumberbatch, like, says, like, some kind of sarcastic thing, he'll kind of, like, twitch his eye, but it's extremely subtle. Like, it's so subtle, you wonder if he's even doing it on purpose or if it's just an accident. Like, it's just, he has those little tics that just, like, oh my God, like, I can totally see, like, to me, that is so believable. Like, he does those tics so well that I feel like he's actually doing them and that's actually his person. You know, like, I'm totally engaged in the story. So anyway, I just wanted to plug Charles Dance because he's incredible, not only in this movie, but in Game of Thrones also. And Rory Kinnear, he was also... I don't know if he's related to Greg Kinnear, but I didn't look that up. But
he's the guy. He's in James Bond.
He's in James Bond. Yeah, he's part of MI6.
Yeah.
With Judi Dench.
Yeah.
It also has music by Alexander Desplat. To me, it's a very very moving musical score. Like I said, I very much enjoy watching this movie. I always kind of, I feel very satisfied with the ending. I know that some people might watch this film and focus on a different aspect of the film than me, and that's okay, because it's certainly there's other aspects of the film that are important. I'm not overlooking that. I'm saying that that is not why it is a moving and important movie to me. It is moving and important to me because I'm very captivated with the kind of awkwardness of the main character and how he kind of fumbles through social interactions, and he doesn't understand social cues, and he doesn't understand that he's doing, you know, faux pas and things like that. Like, he's really kind of not innocent, but like he's really like ignorant in the sense that he doesn't understand why people react the way they do to the things that he does. But it's a very, very engaging. Like, I am so, like, I watched this film, and like I said, it's one of, if not the best, Benedict Cumberbatch film, I would say, arguably to date. And this is The Imitation Game, 2014.
Okay.
Again, may not be totally accurate, fair enough, fine, but it is an incredibly great watch. Every time I watch it, I will always be moved, especially by the ending. Like I said, there are plenty of moments where I laugh or smirk or chuckle, and then there are plenty of emotional moments. And Mark Strong is great also. He's always kind of good as like a side character, like a mentor kind of thing. He was also in The Kingsman too. Like, so he kind of plays those like mentor roles. I think he does well. But he's great in it too. But Keira Knightley, Benedict Cumberbatch, this is The Imitation Game based on Alan Turing.
Was the director of the film?
I don't know. It was a director that I was not familiar with, so it might be this director's only kind of highlight.
I don't know. It's a British director.
Yeah. It was not an actor. Sorry. It was not an actor. It was not a director that I was familiar with, so I didn't write it down because I didn't know that if this person had directed other movies, I wasn't aware. So I that was my mistake for not looking up who the director was. But it's a great, great film. Love it. Love everything about it. The dialogue between the characters. Like I said, Benedict Cumberbatch is just fascinating to watch in this role. Anything else?
The name escapes me of the director, but I do remember the director had done BBC television work,
okay.
And he had worked with Benedict Cumberbatch
okay.
before on BBC.
Okay.
So
yeah, I'm sure it's a lot.
It's escaping me.
I'm sure.
Right now,
yeah, obviously it's a lot of British talent.
Yeah.
Both probably.
Probably
as,
every single one
yeah.
is British right there.
Well, the actors and actresses
yeah.
and probably yeah. And anyway, but yeah, so that may be why I'm not
yeah.
familiar with the director. But in any event, it's an incredible watch. I can't speak highly enough about the film. The next movie on my list, this will be the tease, and obviously it won't be next week, it'll be the week after, but it will be a movie, I will try to reference, it is the best movie by one of my favorite actors, however, it is not, there is a movie by this actor that I rank higher than this movie.
That's not it. No one can guess that.
So what
too.
I'm going to say is, it's one of my favorite actors. It's one of his. It's one of this actor's movies, and I ranked it when we ranked this actor's top 10 movies or whatever. I ranked it as number one. But the movie, it's the movie as a whole doesn't. It has to be below a different movie, in my opinion. So this may be the best the actor's best work, but the movie. Is slightly less, I mean, I'm talking about like minuscule.
Well, film number seven.
Less
so.
Captivating than a film that we'll see later.
All right, well, I still have no idea what it is, and that's okay. Tune in next time to find out what that film is. We are getting to the nuts and bolts of it. We're already there, actually. Great film so far. Theme parks. Usually every month, ever since we've really started this podcast, we've done a segment where we explore different theme park attractions, usually Disneyland or Universal Studios attractions. We've ventured out and done some other attractions, like in Disney World, or Joe's done a great job with some roller coasters from around the world. But we've really run out of Disney attractions at this point. Again, because we've been doing this segment for so long, and we don't want to repeat ourselves. So at least for this week, maybe if it's popular, we can do it again. There are theme parks all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of just doing one ride at one theme park in one specific park, I thought we would just talk about a random theme park from
yeah.
a random spot in the world. So I really just Googled theme parks around the world, and I picked two that I thought were somewhat interesting or looked interesting off the top. Didn't read too much about it before I selected them, and I just thought we'd kind of dig in and do it. Joe, you just talked a little bit, so I'll go ahead and go first. The theme park that I picked is called Alton Towers Resort. It's in Stratfordshire, England. If you look at a picture of Alton Towers, from the outside, it looks like a castle. And it's because this land, it was part of the private estate of the Earl of Shrewsbury back in the 1800s. So it really is, the outside looks like a castle. There's a moat. And it's a massive, massive piece of land. It was open originally, all the way back details, it was open to the public in 1860. To raise funds for the land, as at that point was really just a private land for a very rich family. And in 1980, it transformed into a theme park. It is the second most visited theme park in the UK after Legoland Windsor. Mm-hmm. Maybe Legoland Windsor I'll do another time. The theme park is open from March to November, so not every single month. Again, December, January, February. And even November, to a certain extent, really cold in the UK. So maybe you don't get a lot of theme park visitors at that point. But there's that. There are 41 total attractions in the theme park, which feels like a lot. There are 10 roller coasters, including 5 in the top 10 of UK's best roller coasters. So maybe that would be a place Joe should visit someday. One of the things I thought was cool is some other theme parks are not. A lot of theme parks are not like Disney or Disneyland or even Universal, where it's separated in lands. This is actually separated into theme lands, and so the rides that are there are kind of connected to those lands. Now, it's not themed IP lands per se, but There's one land that's like a technology land, and there's a roller coaster that fits into that land. So there are 11 lands throughout the theme park. There is also the Alton Tower Water Park within this big expansion. There are 7 pools and 10 water slides. It's the biggest water park in the UK within here. There are also 5 hotels on site. So people will specifically visit this place. It's a very much a travel destination. Staffordshire is very much on the outskirts of London. So you get a lot of people visiting from London or the suburbs around London for vacations or stuff like that to go through. Will I ever visit it? I don't know. I mean, it looked very, very cool, I will say. Again, just the outside of the of it is very much this kind of what you would expect an old English castle, old English building to look like. And then there's a video where the doors literally open and it looks just like this fun theme park that's people are there. So very, very cool. And there's one of the lands that is very much kind of this old-timey English thing as well, which very much kind of fits into the theme of that. And again, the hotels are themed differently as well. There's a couple that are very new and, you know, brand new, and it looks brand new and shiny, and one of them kind of has an older, rustic look, like you're visiting Alton Towers and, you know, obviously not the same amenities because they don't want you to feel like you're sleeping in a barn, per se, but a different type of feel. So, yeah, I thought it was cool. I did a couple ride POVs. Again, there were, you know, some rides that go upside down and you know, do 360s and twirls and curls and whatever the names are for them. Then they have some rides for kids where, you know, if you wanted to have little ones, they had some dark rides inside. They also had some water rides. They had like a log ride, which again is a staple in a lot of theme parks. But they also had like a tube theme ride as well, where you're going through and you get wet and you get soaked and stuff like that. So overall, very, very cool. Again, it's Alton Towers Resort in Staffordshire, England.
All right. Yeah, the land that I'm going to talk about today is located in Ohio, although it is not the theme park or amusement park that I have mentioned in the past. It is a different one. But it is this theme park or, you know, amusement park has been around for quite a while. It's celebrating actually its 50th year anniversary this year. Opened in April 29th, 1972, and in Mason, Ohio. So, as I said, in Ohio, and this is Kings Island. The amusement park is operated by Cedar Fair. So, you know, similar to the other theme park in Ohio that I really want to go to, which is Cedar Point. I think it's the same owner. But if you think of this amusement park, is very similar, those of you who live on the West Coast or have been to a Six Flags theme park, it kind of has a similar feel to that. Obviously, it isn't based off of any comic book characters or anything like that. But they have like the Peanuts characters, you know, just little fun kid rides and things, but very much a variety of basic rides like that. Okay. It has 14 roller coasters. It also does have kind of a water park there also.
Nice.
But like I said, it's been around for 50 years. Some of the roller coasters that I wrote down that are pretty noteworthy there and that have gotten awards and you know, records even, there was a wooden roller coaster that they have there called the Beast. It was opened in 1979. And at the time, it was the tallest, fastest, and longest wooden roller coaster in the world. I don't know that it still is. There's also another roller coaster I wrote down called the Banshee. It opened in 2014, and it was the longest inverted roller coaster, meaning the track is above you and you're hanging down. That was the longest inverted roller coaster at that time. And then more recently, they had they built and opened to the public the ride called Orion, which opened in 2020, again, right at the height of the pandemic. But in any event, they did kind of postpone it. But it is a giga coaster. Giga coasters are usually the long, fast roller coasters. They don't have a lot of sudden turns. It's a lot of subtle turns. And such, they don't really go into loops, but they are very long and very fast. That's typically what giga coasters are. This one, Orion, features a 300-foot drop at the very beginning on the lift hill. It goes 91 miles an hour. It reaches a top speed of 91 miles an hour at the end of that drop. And as I said, it opened up in 2020. They have a few other generic, I don't want to say generic rides, but they have rides there looking at the attractions that are similarly found in other theme parks. they have like a drop tower. They have a drop tower where it's like a round column and people sit on the edge and then it kind of drops the one car at the same time, like as you're in a circle, you know, and you fall down. So similar type rides. They also have another ride where you kind of where it's like a pendulum type ride that spins also. So similar type rides that you could find in other, you know, amusement parks.
Yeah.
But this one it gets a lot of accolades because of certain roller coasters that it has, you know, that are always ranked as some of the best in the United States, you know, in terms of quality, whatever. Rides for all ages, you know, carousels and things like that, and sort of, you know, less of the thrill rides too. But, you know, they have like a scrambler type ride and, you know, as I said, a water park. So they have, you know, a nice mix. You know, you'd want to go there with your family and, you know, there would be rides for everybody. But yeah, similarly, this does not have lands. It's more like a Six Flags amusement park where they just have like a bunch of rides in different sections. And, you know, some of them have themes, like I said, about the peanuts, like Charlie Brown. But mostly they're just generic type things. Nothing.
Why Cedar Point versus this one would you prefer?
Because Cedar Point has like the more intense rides. Like this one looks cool, but
even after you listed, like it was all the there's better roller coasters than the ones.
I think the rides at Cedar Point are more intense and more thrill seeking than this.
Okay.
And there's more of those types of rides there. They have a Giga Coaster at Cedar Point too. It may not be as brand new as the one in Kings Island, but I haven't been on any of them. So yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't want to go to this place.
Yeah, you have a good time. Yeah.
I'm just saying my number one at the top of my list is Cedar Point, also in Ohio, but. This one, if I was there, I might, you know, go to it the next day or, you know, because I don't know how far it is. I don't know how far it is from the other amusement park, but I, you know, similar type feel. I just feel like there wasn't as many high intense rides at Kings Island, and there's a lot. There's like four or five at least intense rides, I feel, at Cedar Point. So that is why that's at the top of my list. You know, this one may have like two or three. And I'm not super big on wooden roller coasters, so they have plenty of rides at, I feel like, at the other amusement park in Ohio, they have more rides. A lot of roller coasters, and not all of them or the majority of them are wooden. But in any event, yeah, the Beast is Banshee, Orion. Like I said, those. And they also have like an indoor roller coaster. It's kind of cool. It looks like an alien ship or something. Okay. But again, it's not... It doesn't have any IP name attached to it. It's like called like, you know, whatever, the frightening ride or something
just
like that.
Just a cool ride.
Yeah, but it's supposed to be very cool because it's like in the dark, like kind of like Space Mountain.
Okay.
So
cool. Well, I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
Maybe next month we'll do something similar. Again, mm-hmm. I think you guys have expressed numerous times that you like it when we do these theme park deep dives and backgrounds.
Yeah.
But like I mentioned, we've just run out of the Disney rides that we've gone on. So we're going to give you what you want, which means we'll do something a little different, which will be these theme parks. So thank you so much. Whenever we come back on, Joe will give his number 7 film. Again, we have no idea what that is because that tease gave us no information.
Sure, it does.
You have lots of favorite actors.
Really? Favorite?
I don't know. I mean, if you named the actor, but then that would give it away, though.
Probably. Right, it would. But I think you know some of my favorite actors. And there's not a long list.
All right.
It's a list of maybe like three or four at most.
I already did Hanks. It's Forrest Gump.
I think you're going to be more teased than the listeners. But yes, at least
Christian
Bale,
you've deleted him because he's in a Marvel movie.
I did? Is that what I said?
No.
Okay, thank you.
But next week, whenever we get to it, whenever that next pod is, we'll do that. I will have seen Thor Love and Thunder at that point, so Joe will leave the room at that point, but I'll give a review.
I won't leave the room.
It'll be a non-spoiler review because it'll be opening week whenever we get to it. And then maybe at that point, I'll have seen it. Maybe both of us will have seen at least an episode of The Terminal List at that point.
Okay.
So we'll give you guys.
Maybe I'll have seen Maverick. Maybe at that point.
Yeah, that would be great if you gave. And I think really like it.
I think I might give it a go.
Yeah, it wasn't me that it's the number one movie in the country still.
Yeah.
You know, whatever I said wasn't enough. Other people had to convince you.
It's about the quantity,
not the quality.
I didn't say that.
Oh.
I just said it's about the quantity. If you hear
the number of people,
if you hear from one person, then it's like, okay, well, that's just your opinion, and I know what you like.
That's true.
And
but you've heard it from several
and
people.
Yeah, if you hear it from more than more people, you know, different
backgrounds.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or different interests and things like that. Then okay, you start to get okay. I'll give it a chance, but I'm very.
Still apprehensive?
I'm a little bit apprehensive, but
you're good.
Sorry.
That's okay.
But you saying that it's the number one movie in America after its fifth week?
5 weeks.
Yeah. I don't know if that's necessarily a testament to the movie or a testament to how bad the other movies are. I have no idea. Could be both.
Maybe both.
But in any event, that is not an insignificant thing, so that kind of gives me optimism. So I might give it a go.
It's still my favorite movie of the year so far. Again, lots of film. I mean, again, you know, 6 months of film still to come out. But
it's your favorite film of the year
so far.
Over Spider-Man.
Spider-Man is 2021. It came out last year.
Forgot about that.
That's okay.
It was in December.
Yeah, I mean, technically, it came out in December. That's a technicality.
That's not a technicality. Fair enough. It's last year.
But I did like it better than Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
Okay.
We'll say that.
Okay.
Again, lots of films to come out the last 6 months, but I would say if we were doing a top 10 at the end of the year,
it would be
hard pressed for to see 10 other films being released this year to knock it out.
Okay.
I think it's that good.
Okay.
But again, we will get back to when we get back to it. As always, like, share, comment, rate, review, and subscribe.
And those of you who are celebrating next weekend for the holiday, wish you a happy holiday. Have a barbecue. And
be safe out there.
And we'll see you in a few weeks. Take care, everybody.
All right. Goodbye.